Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. The right mindset is what separates most successful people from the average person. Changing your mindset can be one of the most valuable skills you can learn to help you create your own kick-ass life. Well, we want to help you begin that process today and give you a free copy of David Wood's training, Mindset, Your Key to Success. In this downloadable training, you'll learn how to develop a winner's mindset, how to overcome limiting and negative beliefs, how to love the word no, and much, much more. To download your free training, simply go to thekickasslife.com/free. That's thekickasslife.com/FRE.
Hi, this is Tim Ferriss, author of The 4-Hour Workweek, 4-Hour Body, and The 4-Hour Chef, and you're listening to David Wood on The Kick-Ass Life Show.
Want to make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood. That's so funny. Hey, you know, I'm just sitting here just overwhelmed with gratitude. And if I explain where I'm sitting, I'm sitting on the deck of our new place. And as I look down, I'm up pretty high and I'm perched on a cliff. And down below me is a provincial park called Knox Mountain Park. And there's a place, actually, I can see. I look right down into a place called Paul's Tomb, which is actually a place which I hike to quite often. It's really one of the most pretty hikes. And it's just this beautiful, beautiful sort of walk through the mountains and trees and to this beautiful spot on the lake where you can swim. And just, you know, it's a very, 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 very picturesque. But as I look down, I'm looking down onto this massive lake. It's called Lake Okanagan, where I live, that is absolutely surrounded. All I can see is mountains, lakes, trees. And to my left, I used to live in a little town called Oberstdorf in Germany. I worked as in a Berghaus, which is a mountain house, as a cook. That was funny. I worked in a... a girl I knew was working in another mountain house, which was close by, and my goal was to be out of work very close to her, so I go to this Berghaus, which was really, I mean, I could see that the two were on the same mountain. There were only two on this mountain, and so I went up. And I asked the place where she was, and of course they had no work. And I went down to this other one, and it was amazing because she said, "Well, actually, you know what? We need a cook." I'm saying, "Well, I can cook. I can cook." And you know, I'd done a little cooking here and there, but you know, I wasn't any German cook. And you know, the cooking in Germany at this Berghaus, you know, we had and excuse my accent, ladies and gentlemen, especially my German listeners, because I know that it's been a long time. Ich habe Deutsch gelernt, aber kein Schule gelernt. You know, I learned my German sort of on the street. And but we made like Forellen, which is like trout, and Kaiserschmarrn and Käsespätzles, and you know, just pea soup, and but really, really rich German pea soup with, you know, back bacon. And we used to roast a whole pig on a wood grill outside, you know, and we'd have a beer batter on it, making Käsespätzle, I forgot even how to pronounce Käsespätzle, I believe. It's like a homemade pasta, as it were, or noodle. About all these different things, you know. And so it was bad enough the fact that I was left alone in the kitchen at one point. But the fact is, my German wasn't amazing either. So these people in a busy Berghaus, what they do in Germany is they hike up And then when they get to the top, they sit down in this doghouse and they eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. Like, and then they take the ski lift down. And so so they really, and then you know, they'll drink and they'll eat. And it's just an amazing time. And but it was really funny as because this little sort of collection of houses off to my left, sort of perched and nestled into this mountain. It's just really stunning. It just reminds me as I sit here every morning now, as I wake up, I look over there and I have this sort of these thoughts of Germany and Oberstdorf. And I lived in different parts of Germany, but you know, it's it was funny times. And in the Berghaus, the only time we ever got time off was when the rain was so bad that we would be allowed a day off. So the only time I hiked the mountains was in torrential rain. I mean, it had to be bad. Torrential rain, and we used to love it. We used to get these plastic garbage bags, and we'd cut the hole off the top, and we'd cut two holes for arms, and we'd go hiking. And we would hike through the mountains, and it would be, I mean, the rain would be on sideways, and we'd go to these, you know, a lot of farmers up there had cheese farms, and we'd hike up, and we'd find these cheese farms, and would tap on the door, and even though it was raining, these farmers were amazing. And it was really, you know, that real southern German dialect. It's almost very, very musical. And so I had so many fond memories. And now as I look out across my own view, which is this expansive lake, which is a couple of miles wide, and I mean, I see all the way in. I mean, it's just the whole horizon. It's so big, you know, and I feel like I'm coming into land. It was really funny. A guy came into, I'm having new floors laid, and the floor layer walked in, this young guy, and he had to stop, and he got vertigo. And I've had that happen a couple of times where people come in, because it feels like, you know, for those people that suffer with vertigo, it really sort of brings it on, because it's so beautiful. Again, we're nestled on the edge of this cliff, and it's just so beautiful. And I really bought it as a way of being able to create more. I wanted to have a place that inspired me to write, inspired me to finish my book, inspired me to do more with our show. You know, I really feel that this is a catalyst in creation, because I've always found that when I'm most inspired, I put myself into a situation where I can think and where I can be open, that amazing things always happen. And so I feel incredibly grateful, you know, overwhelmed with gratitude as I sort of think back over this journey, this young punk with his his crappy backpack and no plan, and $2,000, you know, leaving England leaving Tunisia. That's where I had the $2,000. And with no idea where my life was going to end up and no plan of how to get there. And suddenly I find myself so fortunate. And the reason I'm sharing this is not to impress you, because, you know, I think that if you're a regular listener, you kind of get that. It's not that I don't care. I think differently to a lot of people. And yesterday was the reason I wanted to share this was because yesterday I had two very meaningful conversations with two very different types of people. And they really sort of, as I woke up this morning around 5 o'clock this morning, and I just laid and looked out across this vista and looked out a great, you know, the life that I have. And again, what I always start my day with is gratitudes. And what am I grateful for today? And gratitude plays such an incredible role in, I believe, in success. And I think quite often it's very, very easy to forget to be grateful every day. And, you know, we're grateful. When we have dinner with our kids, we do gratitudes. I mean, and this is something we do after virtually every meal when we're alone. And the kids are on automatic pilot with it. You know, two things you're grateful for today, one thing you were good at today, and one thing you're looking forward to. And, you know, everyone goes around the table and shares that. I mean, and it's such a great thing to start really focusing on the things you're grateful for. So I think about the people out there right now who maybe don't have what they want. And what these two conversations were about yesterday, I'm going to get to in a moment. But you don't have what you want in your life. But a great place to start, people say, well, where do you start? And well, you start by being grateful for what you do have. And you start by being grateful for the journey thus far. It doesn't matter how it looks, because if I had gone back and looked at my journey and some of the things that happened, and I don't talk a lot about that, but, you know, a lot of physical abuse, sexual abuse, a lot of anger, a lot of, you know, upset. I mean, there's just a lot of very negative things going on, a really negative school. You know, there was nothing that I can think back on that you could say, oh, that was really, that was beautiful. You know, and remember, you know, again, having lived in a condemned building with my mom and my brother and my sister, you know, where my sister had to put perfume on a handkerchief to walk up the stairs because it was so, the stench was just foul. And one of our rooms was, you know, uninhabitable because there was human feces, you know, smeared all over the walls. I mean, this was a place that, you know, we as little kids, that's where we lived, right? And of course, I remember as a kid not knowing. I didn't know that I was a slum kid until I started getting beaten up at school because I was a slum kid, right? But that was the sort of the viciousness of the East End of London where we lived at that time, you know. But I would never go back and want to change one thing. There's nothing I want to change. I know that part of the majesty of creating a kick-ass life is sometimes the hardest stories, you know. And some of you out there right now are in the middle of the hard part of your story, and every single person I've interviewed on the show thus far, almost everyone has hit a place in their life where of dissatisfaction. And the difference, I think, between those people that have stepped forward and created the success they want, and I know for sure that each of you wants some form of success. I otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to the show. There must be something calling to you, unless you just enjoy my voice. And I know there's some of you like that. I mean, I know there's CEOs of very large companies who already have the life they want. So I'm not assuming that every single person doesn't have what they want. But I do assume that there is something else calling. There's your story, this unwinding story, this script that's yet to be written, this next chapter of your life book that I think is calling. And that's what I realize. I realize that, you know, my gratitude for everything that's gone thus far. And there's not a chance. When I arrived in Kelowna, when I was illegal in Canada, you know, I remember I'd sort of worked my way. It'd take me months and months to get from the Vancouver Island to Kelowna. And it was a very interesting, I may have already shared a little piece of this story, but, you know, I'd been traveling and hitchhiking through the United States this particular day, and I'd been picked up by a couple of real kind of odd rides. Two guys were going to the Grateful Dead concert and were really strung out on drugs. I had to climb through the window of their car. I think I've already told that story. And then I was picked up by a guy who was obsessed with guns, and then I see a sign for Canada. I had no intention to come here. And I said, just drop me here. And I end up, you know, slept on a roof the first night in Victoria and started to get work. And my first job was cleaning rooms. My second job was working in a fish and chip shop. But then, you know, when I worked in this fish and chip shop, this guy used to come every day, and he was a little bit down because his fishing boat had sunk at the wharf. It was like a $5 valve had gone, and his 1934 fishing boat, you know, had sunk. And so he was sort of stuck on land while it was being pumped down, the engine was being done. And we became friends. And he, you know, as we became friends, he said, well, you know, Dave, if you can get a permit, you know, you can come fishing with me. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, whatever. So I go, and I end up taking the girl out from the Department of Fisheries or whatever it is, or permits. I can't remember exactly where she worked now. And she ended up giving me a permit to be on the boat, and that was amazing. So I went and spent this sort of summer out, and it was a commercial diving boat diving for sea urchins. And I remember the wheelhouse was very small. I mean, it was just bigger than my shoulders, and there was this big old-fashioned wheel, big old wooden wheel. And I used to have to sleep on deck because there was no room in the boat for me to sleep, but I didn't care. Imagine chugging around the west coast of Vancouver Island, and you know, with orcas and seals and sea lions and kelp beds, and then getting to go in the water on these majestic forests of kelp. I mean, it's unbelievable, and you're always kind of looking over your shoulder a little bit because it's teeming with life, right? And so, you know, we'd go out and we would chug around to a place, and when how the fisheries work is that they they have openings, and the openings could be for a few hours. So you know, you're given a location, you get out to that location, and you sit out there for sometimes a day, which is stunning. I mean, it's unbelievably beautiful on the west coast of Vancouver Island. If you haven't been, put it on your bucket list. It's unbelievable. And then suddenly the opening happens, and you know, you fish like crazy, or dive and harvest like crazy, and then the opening closes, right? And that's it. You have your catch, and then you go off, and that's how they protect the species. And we were actually diving for sea urchins for the Japanese market. And anyway, it was unbelievable. But in the wheelhouse was a picture of Lake Louise. I'd never heard of it, never been there. And Lake Louise, if you look it up, is one of the most visited places in Canada. And it's stunning. It's a glacier with a turquoise blue lake and this beautiful lodge that was built there with great hiking trails. And there's bears, and it's unbelievable. And I've been there hundreds of times since, but I thought, you know what, before I leave this country, because remember, I'm backpacking. I'm not planning a stay. I'm just on the adventure. I decide I'm going to get to that place. So I finished my diving season, and I go into Vancouver, so I have to cross. There's a ferry that takes you from Vancouver Island to Vancouver, and I'm in this big city. I don't know anyone, and I see that a fish called Wanda is playing at a cinema, and I'm thinking, that's Monty Python, right? And I'm thinking, I've got to go see that, right? So first night in town, I go in there, and the place is almost empty. Obviously not a lot of Monty Python fans or John Cleese fans in the cinema, but I sit in front of these three girls, and one of them taps me on the shoulder. She says, you know, the whole cinema's empty. You don't have to sit right there. I said, I'm so sorry. So I move over and watch the movie. And as we're walking out, I chat to these three girls. And there's only like four of us in the whole cinema. And so we sort of share a couple of words back and forth. And then Monique, one of the girls, I said, hey, excuse me. I said, can I ask you a question? She said, yeah. I said, do you like to cook? She said, I love to cook. I said, great. I love to eat. I said, you should invite me for dinner. Anyway, so they did. And I ended up staying with them for about 3 or 4 months. And I'm on my way on this sort of journey to get to Lake Louise. And I stayed there 3 or 4 months. And every time I went to leave, and these three girls, Linda, Andrea, and Monique, all nurses, and they're just amazing people. And they, none of them had boyfriends, and they were all kind of very, very saving themselves. They saving themselves for marriage, because they all had very deep Catholic beliefs. And so we were like friends, just best friends. So to be a sort of a guy, you know, with three girls all in the same house and have a friendship, and we'd snuggle up on the couch together and watch movies, and we'd make great meals, and they would take me and all over the city, and we'd play tennis together, and you know, and one of our favorite things was to play tennis in the rain. I'm not a lover of the rain, by the way, but I mean, it's just so funny that this story comes out, and you'll see where I'm going with this story in a moment. This is just one journey, and finally, I end up leaving, and I end up jumping on a Greyhound bus, and I think it took about 9 hours to get to Kelowna. And I was going to Lake Louise, which was another sort of 14 or 15 hours on a bus. So anyway, I jump off the bus. I'm thinking, you know, I can't spend another 9 hours on the bus. I throw my guitar into the lockup at the Greyhound bus station, and I walk into town. And I walk into a little restaurant called Kelly O'Brien's, and it's an Irish pub kind of thing. And I'm standing there at the door, and it was a lineup. And suddenly this girl with red hair named Sandy Fazan, she comes up. She taps me on the shoulder. She says, hey, she said, are you alone? I said, I am. She said, would you like to join us? I said, sure. You know? So anyway, I go sit down with this. And she's a great girl. And we're chatting, and she's got two friends there. And she knows everyone there. And there's a guy playing live music. His name's Rand Berry, who's become a really, really close friend of mine. And he's playing, and you imagine this Irish pub, right? And in the end, Sandy, I said, well, you know, I might as well stay here. There's all these friendly people. That's the beauty of traveling around the world like I was, right? I could stay anywhere I wanted. Anyway, so she introduces me to the manager, Kathy, and I end up becoming a dishwasher in this pub, in this Irish restaurant. Anyway, but I had bigger aspirations than a dishwasher, but so what happened was a lot of the waiters, they would dump their plates, but they wouldn't scrape them. So I started squirting them with water every time they didn't scrape them, because it just made more work for me, and it was, in my mind, a little bit lazy. So I end up, they end up giving me a chance on the floor to waiter. And, well, you know, I mean, it was one of those things. It's a chance. It wasn't that it was like, you know, you have a job. He said, well, we try it out there then. If you can't work in here without soaking everyone, go out there. And they had a competition. There was a Coors Light ski jacket, red and white one with the Coors logo on. And the person that sold the most Coors in this given period would win a ski jacket. I started selling Coors for breakfast. I'd go out to people, I'd say, hey, listen, you know, if they see the jacket on the wall there, I want to learn how to ski. I've never skied, and there's a ski hill here. I'd never even been on the ski hill. I'd never been on skis, right? I said, I want to learn how to ski. I said, can you buy a beer for breakfast? Because I could sell the most beer. And, you know, I started to sell. I outsold everyone by so much, and I won this ski jacket. And anyway, so that started my journey here in Kelowna. I still hadn't got to Lake Louise, but I ended up going and spending a season on the ski hill. And a lot of these people in this story, Sandy Fazan, she became instrumental in my life. She's a police officer now. And Rand Berry, the guy who was playing the music that particular day when I arrived here, he's become a very, very close friend. We were business partners for a while, quite a long time. And his band, he has a 7-piece band. He has played at my 50th birthday. We have a lot of parties with him playing. But, you know, we're really like brothers, really. And so many of these people. And I end up living up a Big White ski season. For a ski season and learning to ski, and it was amazing. And at the end of that ski season, we bought an old car for about $139. It was an old Buick Century, and three of us, me, John, and Keith, decided to drive the car till it dropped. And we ended up driving to Seattle or Vancouver first. We visited Monique Linder, and we stayed there for a couple of days, and then we went down to Seattle. We visited somebody else I'd met on the ski hill, and we ended up traveling all over the United States. We drove this old car. We drove it from down to the Grand Canyon to Sedona, and we drove across to up to Chicago. You know, we had this amazing, amazing adventure in this old car. We ended up giving it to a student. Anyway, this has been the kind of story. I still hadn't got to Lake Louise. It was about 2.5 years later that I finally said, I got to go to Lake Louise, you know. And that's when I started to decide that Canada was going to be my home. And this was in 1990, around 89, 90. Just to give you context, that I was still living out of my backpack. I was just living really in the moment with so many things happening and accepting all the offers from the universe. And I do believe that the universe is making offers. And I said this yesterday. So my point today was about, you know, the fact yesterday, a young painter, a friend, I don't know, so he's not a friend of mine, but as a guy who's painted two of my houses, the last two homes I've had, his name's Terrence, he came up here yesterday to quote on my new place. And as we're sitting here, I could see his eyes wide and in wonder, you know, in the sense of where I'm living and what it looks like to him, because he'd been at my last two homes, right? And my first home that he painted was the one right after my marriage had ended. And so, you know, he's seen this progression in my life. And so he starts to ask questions. And talk about the struggle he's been in the last few years. And I remember when he painted my house then, I gave him a personal development book to read. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Think and Grow Rich. And we started talking. And so I sat and talked to him for about an hour. And he had his little son with him. And I could see in his eyes this kind of, this person who's kind of stuck in this struggle, you know, that he's single dad now with two kids. And can only work 4 days a week painting, so he's, you know, trading time for money, and just sort of feeling overwhelmed and talking about the struggle of his you know his wedding his marriage has ended, and really he started to say, you know, I feel such an idiot. I said, why? He said, because you told me all those years ago, which it wasn't that many years ago, it was probably, what, 7-8 years ago, he says, you told me then that I could have anything I wanted. And you even gave me a book, and I didn't really believe it. And now I see what you're doing with your life and how you're leading your life. And I said, can I ask you a question? Then Terrence, what's that? I said, tell me about your friends. Who do you hang out with? And he's proceeded to tell me that, you know, that they weren't very inspiring people. They you know, there was, you know, this is a very base in their approach to life and really no passions, no dreams, no goals. And I said, you know, Terrence, it has to start there. It has to start with who you hang out with. You gotta understand that. You can't still have it all. And I said, you shouldn't feel bad at all. I said, because every great person that I've ever worked with has always had this story where they hit a place where the pain of being in the place was far greater than the pain of actually stepping out of it. And the fear associated with that. And then later on in the day, one of our loyal followers. I won't say his last name, but he lives in the United States. His name's Andrew. Andrew, I'm going to dedicate this show to you. We talked for about an hour and a half last night. And similar place in some ways with a different story. This guy's passionate. He's done a lot of personal growth. You know, he's tried a number of things. They haven't all worked out. A couple of kids. You know, his wife's having to work really, really hard. And she's having to work, you know, a third shift. And, I mean, just a really hard story. But a guy who's full of dreams and has put time and effort into. And his story, which is slightly different and why I wanted to bring it up, was more of a person who's lost the confidence in himself to create because he's tried some things that didn't go well. And then that trusting self to step out of where you're at and into something else, that fear of stepping into something greater, letting go of what we have. And that's yesterday's what I saw is both these people, different stories. Andrew is, you know, he has a job that he thought he was going to be really passionate about, but he goes after things, and I can hear in his voice that he's just ready. He's just ready to repaint the canvas of his life. And Terrence is just waking up again, you know, after sort of bumping back into me after all these years and realizing that the story I told him was true. I believed at the time. He's watched emerge in my life, you know, because my wife and I separated, I wasn't wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, you know, and when you lose, and no, I didn't lose anything, by the way, I walked away from our home and everything I had, so I had nothing. I started from scratch, and so it was the beginning of something. And at the time, it could have been the worst thing. I remember being absolutely mortified as I left my children. And I've always stayed in the same town. And you guys who are separated from your wives and guys especially, listen to me. Don't ever say a negative word about your wife to anyone, at any time, ever. If you separate, just walk away and then start to build the friendship. It may take 5 years, it may take 10 years, but you have to, and ladies, same thing with you. I mean, but I just feel that there's strategies. I watch people I was having a conversation the other day and I was listening to this guy and he's separated and he's talking about his wife and I had to stop him. I said, can I give you one piece of advice? And he said, yeah. I said, stop it. Stop talking about that. I mean, you guys were in love at one time, and yeah, it didn't work out. But step into something greater. Then you have to honor the part of your wife that you love the most, and then that's the part that you talk about. How amazing she is. You have kids, right? Even if you put out bad words into the ether when you're drunk with your mates, don't do it. Just to focus on those great parts of who she is and why you loved her. And that's it. And then start rebuilding. Because at some point, I think if you do, you can have a great friendship. So anyway, getting back to these two, we've only got a few minutes left here, is this whole idea of struggle and survival. And that this story that, for me, I believe we're already connected to everything we want. Everything, all the dreams and goals. And I talked about this a little bit the other day about some sort of form of cosmic soup. It's like whatever we want, once we wake up and we start to step into this life called kick-ass, for me anyway, that's how my determination of it is that we can have everything. But it's hard when you're in that place. But I remember, you know, when I was cleaning rooms and working in a fish and chip shop and, you know, and grunting out. I mean, I was a painter and decorator. That was the interesting thing yesterday because Terrence is a painter and decorator. Well, so was I. You know, I owned a painting and decorating company in England, you know, and I used to be on the rollers and the brushes and up ladders and painting, you know, and that's what I did every single day, you know, and don't tell me, please don't tell me that education or you know, growing up with the right family or living in the right neighborhood has anything to do with success. It doesn't. It may give you a leg up sometimes because, again, you're around different types of people. You're around people that want, that dream, that think bigger, that have more things that they want to do as opposed to getting high or getting drunk or, you know, punching out their wife, right? So, you know, the sort of the idea then, if you're in the rags part of your story and you want to get to the riches part, you know, is really that gratitude piece, I think, is really to have that gratitude piece inside you. You know, and Thomas Edison talked about, you know, I didn't fail. He says, I just found 10,000 ways not to make a light bulb. And that's really it. You know, if you're in the middle of your story, and Andrew, I dedicate this show to you, but that confidence to step out of and to regain the trust in self, because you may have Edison took 10,000 times to get his light bulb fixed. And unfortunately, once we start to lose our own inner confidence to say, well, you know, that failed, so that failed. If I lined up all the failures, and I remember Michael Jordan, you know, he talked about, you know, missing 2,000 game-winning shots. You know, and he goes through this list of all the things he failed, shots that would have won the game for his team, you know, and the hundreds and thousands of things that he did wrong. He said, that's why I'm great, because I kept missing, and I kept missing, and I kept missing, and I kept missing. I kept shooting, you know. And Wayne Gretzky says, he says, you miss 100% of the shots you never take. And that's it, you know. It's a question of getting up and taking that next shot. It's a question of failing heroically if you have to, and not focusing on the failure, focusing on the experience of the failure. What is it you now know? What have you learned through that experience? How can you elevate yourself into that next level of your life? And it doesn't matter if you're driving your car right now, if you're in a situation or a relationship that sucks, or maybe it doesn't suck. Maybe it's just blah. Maybe it's just like, it's even worse than sucking is when it's nothing. You know, you're just sort of roommates, right? And maybe there's a lot of things going on, but how do you start repainting the canvas of your life? Well, first focusing on gratitude and then focusing on environment. I know I tell you this all the time, but I tell you, I mean, I've got guys listening to my show regularly that still haven't picked up the environment piece. Where, well, who am I going to hang around with now that's going to help inspire and step me into something greater? And I realized that that was the compass I used to travel around the world. And you just heard, you know, just a few months of my story, or maybe a year or so of a story that lasted 10 and a half years. But the compass was, you know, well, are these people great? Is there something I want to learn here? They weren't always the most intelligent people. It was the experience. But am I growing here? Is there wonder here? All those are the things. Those are the things that just inspired me. And that's what made me stay. And as soon as I got to a place where it became more blah, I stepped out of it and trusted myself to step in. And that's the muscle of trust that I built in myself. And I'm telling you, hundreds of things I've tried that never worked. They didn't go well, and I just don't focus on it. It doesn't work. Okay, that's not working. Stop that. Let's focus on something else. But again, what happens is when we, and again, Andrew, that's something I heard in your voice a little bit, is that it didn't work, so now I don't trust myself to step into that greater peace. And Andrew, you're an amazing man. I enjoyed talking to you so much, and it was great. An hour and a half we spent on the phone, and I heard every dream in the back of your voice, and the goals and aspirations, and the work you've already done, and then hitting a wall and staying put. You know, pulling up the cozy chair and putting your feet up on that couch, and not being in a happy way, but in a dissatisfied way, is that we're sitting in that chair right now saying, well, you know, this is it. This is my life. No, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. You know, imagine your hands in this cosmic soup. You can have whatever you want. So with that being said, you know, I'm already 2 minutes over. I'm sitting here out on the deck. I'm recording this right into my phone, by the way. And, I'm mesmerized by this beauty, mesmerized. I'm in awe of it. And I'm in awe of you, you know, that you take the time to listen to this show. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for so many things, but I'm especially grateful for you. So I will see you all on the other side.
Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course at thekickasslife.com.
That was kick-ass.